Good evening, everybody. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're going to hang out for a while. It's about 7 past the hour. We have a lot of ground to cover tonight. We have some sound for you from today's press briefing with Too Much Cappuccino Perino. We have 4 sound bites that I think you'll find extremely incredible. Classic examples of the use of newspeak or the destruction of language as only Bush crime family members and George Orwell are capable of handling effectively. This has to do with the testimony by Julie Gerberding, the head of, I believe that's how you say her name, the head of the CDC here in Atlanta, that's located here in Atlanta, in her testimony before Congress the other day. And how she was forced, one would assume, at the barrel of a gun to not testify in the manner in which she had planned to. She is forced to submit to the Bush White House her comments before she goes before Congress. She submitted, I think, a 14-page commentary, was given back a 4-page or 6-page commentary, and more or less told to shut up about, well, we'll get to it. I think you'll find it extremely interesting to hear how Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino handled the crack White House press corps when they questioned her about this. Thank God for Code Pink. They did it again today, didn't they? Hearings where Condoleezza Rice, probably the most inept, unqualified Secretary of State in at least the past 5 or 6 Republican administrations, went to testify before Tom Lantos's committee, House Committee on something or other. I don't even know what the House Committee was. I don't think it really matters anymore. But it was a hearing on U.S. Middle East policy, and as she approached the table where she would sit and commit her acts of banality before this congressional hearing, a Code Pink woman named Desiree Anita Ali Farouz approached her with red hands, blood-colored hands, and called her what she is, a war criminal. Captivating video. It's all over the Internet. Just type in Rice war protester, and you'll probably get 8 or 9 different sites to go see the video. You ought to see it. Anyway, according to Reuters news agency, this anti-war protester waved blood-colored hands in Rice's face at this hearing on Wednesday, a shadow war criminal was pushed away and detained by police. Desiree Anita Ali Farouz hollered, "The blood of millions of Iraqis is on your hands." She's with the Code Pink organization, which often, I love this line, which often disrupts hearings on Capitol Hill with protests against the Iraq war. Why am I not there, Kathy? Why am I not disrupting these crappy-ass hearings? And Tom Lantos, of course, his reaction was, "Out! Raus mit du! Raus!" I know. Don't correct my German. I know I say that wrong every time. But that's all right. Tom Lantos, who bills himself as the only Holocaust survivor serving in the United States Congress, and based on that alone, should know that Code Pink is on the side of anti-fascism. Representative Lantos, the Code Pink organization is trying to stop in this country what annihilated 6 million Jews in Europe. How could you, Mr. Lantos, scream at her, "Out! Out!" as if she was some dog. Oh, well. Rice, who is as much of an architect of Bush's murderous, bloody foreign policy as Hermann Göring was of Hitler's, appeared unfazed by the incident. Of course not. And if you listen, if you watch the minute-long video, however long it is, you will hear as people are being dragged from the hearing room because Tom, out! Lantos demanded that five more code pink people who were doing nothing but sitting there quietly holding a sign, out, were also forcibly removed. But you can hear Rice saying, oh, hi, how are you? Mm-hmm. Yes, good to see you again. While American citizens are being dragged from a public hearing room because they had the absolute temerity to be honest. Ali Farouz was charged with disorderly conduct and assault on a police officer. She was also charged with defacing government property for smearing the red paint from her hands on the hallway wall outside the hearing room. Thank God for Code Pink. And what am I doing? Sitting on my ass behind this microphone. That's what I'm doing. Every time I turn around, these incredibly fierce, brave, courageous members of Code Pink are saying, no, goddammit, we've had enough. No, we've had enough. Now, I'm not going to get into self-abuse tonight, but sometimes I'm just embarrassed that that I'm not participating in civil disobedience the way they are. Tom Lantos screaming out to these people, my God. This was the hearing where Rice today alleged
perhaps the single greatest challenge to U.S. national security is Iran's nuclear program.
Where have we heard that before, Ms. Rice? Huh? Where have we heard that before? The single greatest threat to U.S. national security today is Iran's nuclear program? No, I think the single greatest threat would be China's financing of your corrupt boss's occupation, Condi, or Vladimir Putin's decision to develop what he is referring to as an unstoppable nuclear weapon in response to your psychopathic boss's decision to literally invade the psychic space of Russia with a so-called anti-missile system. Now, I don't think Iran's nuclear program, Ms. Rice, is the single greatest threat to American security. I'm sorry. I'm not as smart as you are, but I just don't think that's the situation. I really don't. Jeff in Pittsburgh, California, sent me an email earlier today. Mike, I just heard from Tom on Tom Hartman's program that Fox News is reporting a release from the FBI claiming the next Al-Qaeda attack will come in the form of, quote, setting wildfires, end quote. From Fox News. I guess it was just a matter of time, wasn't it? Jeff writes. Yeah, of course. And by the way, as a kind of a postscript to the courageous and heroic efforts by these firefighters, which I just can't I can't imagine doing that. We used to have a frequent caller from, where was he from, Kathy? Idaho, I believe, who was a smoke jumper. He would jump into forest fires and assist them put them out. I haven't heard from him in over a year. My own son, Chris, was a firefighter in South Carolina. He was not a smoke jumper, but he was a firefighter nonetheless. And I know how I felt about Chris being a firefighter. I guess it's like having someone in combat. You just have to set it out of your mind. But I cannot imagine the courage, the perseverance of these firefighters in California. And did you know that, I think the report was roughly 100 firefighters who are assisting were brought over from Mexico. They came across the border to help Mexican firefighters. I wonder if any of these, I wonder if Lou Dobbs and any of his posse, some of these malicious psychos, were down there checking their papers before they came in. Are you legal or illegal? What are you here for? You're here to fight fires? Oh, yeah? How do we know you're going to go home when you're finished? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Life is funny. Skies are sunny. Bees make honey. Honey, boom, boom, boom.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Twenty-one past the hour. In addition to Fox suggesting, Fox Noise Channel suggesting, it might be Al-Qaeda. That started the fires. Neil Cavuto of Fox News Channel made, who sent me this? One Stop Jen? Okay. Neil Cavuto of Fox News Channel made a comment on the air yesterday claiming that San Diego evacuees are living it up at Qualcomm Stadium. Here is what Cavuto said to promote the segment. Quote, lavish meals, piping hot coffee, even massages. Almost all the comforts of home. This is how San Diego is treating its fire victims. End quote. What is festive about losing your home? What is lavish? The comforts of home? It's a goddamn stadium, Cavuto, you freak! It's a sports stadium. What would you know, though, right? There I go again. We're only 23 minutes into the program already. I've got the potty mouth because of these filthy pigs. It's just unbelievable. The question is not how are these refugees? We're not supposed to use that word. These evacuees are being treated. It is the fact that somebody at this slimy sump hole of a television network can make comments like that and nobody protests. I mean, nobody protests to the extent of having these people thrown off of cable systems or having Neil Cavuto's head rammed up his own bunghole or something. Just anything. No, it's just business as usual at Fox Noise Channel. And right before we went on the air, as if I don't have enough weirdness to deal with, Bob sent me a list of a couple of stories here. This, Kathy, you'll remember this story. We talked about this in Chicago in 1999, 8 years ago, when I first started talking about, when I first found out about, thanks to who was it? Lance in Manhattan, Illinois, who first introduced us to depleted uranium. Is that who it was? So 8 years ago, we were talking about depleted uranium that was in the weaponry used by NATO in its attack on Serbia. And also, it came to our attention that the depleted uranium was being used in the ongoing poisoning of Iraq subsequent to Herbert Walker Bush's invasion and war in that country. So we started doing research, and it was a hot topic on my program. I hate that term. I don't know how else to put it. For months, to the point that finally the management at WLS, suggested it was another topic I probably shouldn't devote so much time to, because who cared? But one of the aspects of the story 8 years ago was the fact that depleted uranium this heavy metal, this radioactive metal, could in fact be used, could be recycled into consumer products. And I remember sitting there in the August studios of ABC in Chicago, WLS, sitting there talking about, you got to be kidding, in toddlers' silverware? This stuff could wind up in little trikes that the kiddies... Yes. The answer was yes. And I thought at the time, no, okay, well, just because... And I don't know where the story was being publicized. Maybe it was Public Citizen back then. Maybe it was the newspaper, Chicago Tribune. I don't... Maybe somebody sent it to me. I have no idea. But I remember talking about it. And as a result of... talking about it, I thought, okay, well, maybe something will happen, maybe nothing will happen, but surely to God, we have smarter people at the Department of Energy or wherever who will not allow this to happen, will not allow the recycling of depleted uranium, which is a very durable metal. That's why it's used by the military. It can pierce tanks and go through everything. The only problem is, when it's pulverized, when it becomes dust, it's still radioactive. Or you can do your own research. Don't send me stuff on DU, because I spent so much time reading about depleted uranium. But you ought to do the research yourself. Just type in depleted uranium in any search engine and then sit back, because you'll have about 2 years of reading to handle. But 9 years ago, 8 years ago, we were talking about this. No, this can't. They're not going to recirculate depleted uranium into consumer products. That was in 1999. Here we are in the fall of 2007, and when we come back from this break, I will tell you the latest, thanks to Public Citizen and Bob Alexander, who sent it to me. Hold on to your ass, because I don't think you're going to like this. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
To escape, be prepared to meet the Lord. When the mushroom of destruction falls, there is a shielding sword. He will surely stand beside you, and you'll never taste of death. For your soul will fly to safety in eternal peace and rest. Are you ready for that great atomic power? You rise and meet your Savior in the air.
Have nuclear weapons, and still more have nuclear aspirations.
There must be more to life than lucky strikes and some unlucky ones. Folded flames and pipes and drums.
25 before the hour. So, depleted uranium, 8 years ago, I remember talking about this on the air, that there was talk of allowing depleted uranium into consumer products, including products for children, walkers for people who, older folks or people with spinal or knee injuries who needed walkers, metallic crutches, pots, pans, silverware. Children, just consumer products. And then the story disappeared until this evening. This is from Public Citizen. Recent decision in a federal lawsuit will result in the continued recycling of thousands of tons of radioactive metal for use in household products. Because of a loophole in the Superfund cleanup law, a federal judge said she could not order the Department of Energy to stop the practice by which nuclear materials are recycled and used in everyday consumer products. The nuclear industry, in cooperation with the federal government, has been attempting to, quote, deregulate, end quote, radioactive metals from weapon facilities and decommissioned nuclear power plants since the 70s. Public Citizen and other citizens' organizations have successfully prevented this practice prior to the ruling. In a June 29 decision, U.S. District Judge Gladys Kessler used strong language about the danger this recycling poses to the public, but said she could not order the DOE to write an environmental impact statement, thanks to a Superfund loophole. The judge described, as her words, startling and worrisome. The absence of opportunity for, quote, public scrutiny or input on a matter of such grave importance, the potential for environmental harm is great, especially given the unprecedented amount of hazardous materials which the defendants seek to recycle, end quote. The defendants were, of course, the nuclear industry. Public Citizen then writes, the result, 100,000 tons. 100,000 tons of radioactive metals to be sold as scrap metal for use in items ranging from frying pans to baby carriages, said Winona Hauter, director of Public Citizen's Critical Mass Energy Project. Public Citizen and other groups are urging Congress and Vice President Gore to halt the nuclear materials recycling contract between the Department of Energy and the British Nuclear Fuels Limited. That's the company that was awarded a contract way back in 1997 to recycle radioactive metals. Now, this doesn't even, as far as I can tell, address depleted uranium. This is stuff left over that is radioactive, metallic sources that are radioactive as a result of being contaminated with radioactive material, obviously. It's astonishing, isn't it? I mean, we apparently, there is just no desire on the part of this filthy government of ours to do anything to prevent illness or sickness or death or destruction or the end of the human species or environmental degradation or making our children glow in the dark. They don't give us they don't care about anything. Oh my God. And then there's this from the Chicago Tribune. I don't know how I missed this. It came out yesterday. The Bush administration is considering airstrikes against the Kurdish rebel group PKK in northern Iraq in an attempt to stave off a Turkish invasion of Iraq to fight the very same rebels, according to administration officials. President Bush spoke with Turkish President Abdullah Gül by phone Monday in an effort to ease the crisis. According to an official familiar with the conversation, Bush assured the Turkish president that the U.S. was looking seriously into options beyond diplomacy. The official said, quote, it's not kumbaya time anymore. Just talking about trilateral talks is not going to be enough. Something has to be done, end quote. The U.S. would be willing to launch airstrikes on Kurdish rebel group targets, the officials said, and the U.S. has discussed the use of cruise missiles. But airstrikes using manned aircraft may be an easier option because the U.S. controls the airspace over Iraq, the officials said. And the official familiar with the Bush-Gul conversation, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said, quote, in the past, there has been reluctance to engage in direct U.S. military action against the PKK, either through airstrikes or some kind of special forces action. But the red line was always, if the Turks were going to come over the border, it could be so destabilizing that it might be less risky for us to do something ourselves. Now the Turks are at the end of their rope, and our risk calculus is changing. Now, remember all the people who said that Bush was inflaming Bush's invasion and occupation of Iraq was going to destabilize and inflame the entire region and beyond. Well, here you are. You remember last week, Turkey's parliament passed a resolution authorizing that government to send troops across the Iraqi border at any time. And the Kurdistan regional government warned that any airstrikes by the U.S. or the Turks could inflame nationalist sentiments among the millions of Kurds who live inside Turkey. Kubad Talabani, a spokesman for the Kurdistan regional government, said in Washington, D.C., quote, "If the U.S. starts bombing PKK camps in the north, Turkey will be ablaze tomorrow," end quote. Isn't the prime minister of Iraq is a Kurd? Jesus, God. This is the Bush foreign policy. And I'm sure the sick, psychotic Christian fundamentalists, the Dominionists, are just applauding this, like the people who put together Blackwater, because this is one step closer to the huge battle of Armageddon, wherein Jesus will be so thrilled by all the death and destruction, he will return to lift his people up after they've murdered all the Jews, of course. Good news night, huh? And I haven't even gotten to the really heavy-duty stuff yet. Oh, my God! RawStory.com is reporting this. Again, it's from our friend at the coffee company. Nick Giuliani, Giuliano has written this. I heard it earlier today from some source. The Bush's wars are going to cost 40 times higher than original estimates. 40 times higher. 40 times higher. The new estimates show Iraq and Afghanistan will cost $2.4 trillion. That's $8,000 for every human being in the United States, and there are 300 million of us. $2.4 trillion. Now, more than one-fourth of the money spent in Afghanistan and Iraq, $700 billion, will go to paying interest on the money that this Bush bastard has put us in debt for his amusement in Iraq and Afghanistan. You see, Bush's amusements are being funded with borrowed dollars. Remember, he issued orders for tax cuts. Normally, when you decide to wage war on two fronts, you increase taxes to pay for it. But not this sorry son of a bitch. Of course not. China, among others, is funding our war against Iraq and Afghanistan. China is providing the notes, the money. China is the one that will own this country when this Bush bastard is finished with us. And Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid say impeachment is off the table. What does this man have to do? What does he have to do in order for the United States House of Representatives to stand up on its hind legs and begin impeachment process, the impeachment process, as ordered by the Constitution? What does he have to do? What did Bill Clinton have to do in order to get the Republicans to impeach him? We have, miles to go before we sleep. The Democrats did it again today. They assisted the Republicans in confirming Leslie Southwick to fill a seat on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. We'll talk about that coming up in this next segment here. And as part of a quotation that is pertinent to the story, I will be using the N-word. So if that offends you, tune out now. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Oh, get sick, get well, hang around the inkwell. Hang bell, hard to tell if anything is gonna tell. Try hard, get boxed, get back, ride trail, get jail, jump bail. Join the army, it's fail. Look out, kids, you're gonna get... Mm.
My administration has developed a SAND national plan to help meet our energy needs this year.
It's about 10 before the hour.
Every time I've cried.
Bush nominated Leslie Southwick. He was his third nominee to fill the seat in the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Fifth Circuit. The psychopath in the White House had originally tried to fill the seat with Charles Pickering, the judge. Wasn't he the Ten Commandments judge, I think it was, and then Michael Wallace, both of whom faced significant opposition because of their disturbing legal records, especially on civil rights. According to People for the American Way, Southwick also had a troubling record and appears to be cut from the same cloth as the others. That's according to Ralph Nees, who is the president of People for the American Way. Southwick served as a judge on Mississippi's Intermediate Appellate Court, the Mississippi Court of Appeals, from 1995 to 2006. Two cases in particular highlighted Southwick's lack of commitment to the social justice progress of the last 50 years. In 1998, Southwick, Judge Southwick, joined a ruling in an employment case that upheld the reinstatement without any punishment whatsoever of a white state employee who was fired for calling an African-American co-worker a good old nigger. The court's decision effectively ratified a hearing officer's opinion that the slur was only somewhat derogatory and, quote, was in effect calling the individual a teacher's pet. In Mississippi, good old nigger translates to teacher's pet. The Mississippi Supreme Court unanimously reversed that decision. In 2001, Judge Southwick joined a ruling that upheld a decision to take an 8-year-old girl away from her mother and award custody of the child to the father, who had never married the mother, because the mother was living with another woman in a, quote, lesbian home, end quote. Judge Southwick went even further by joining a gratuitously anti-gay concurrence which extolled Mississippi's right under, quote, the principles of federalism, unquote, to treat homosexual persons as second-class citizens. In other words, truth seekers, Judge Southwick agreed with the idea that people who happen to be gay, whether they're moms, dads, or neither, happen to be second-class citizens and as such are not guaranteed equal protection under the law and can, as a consequence of that, have their 8-year-old child taken from them. Judge Southwick suggested that sexual orientation is a choice and stated that an adult is not, quote, relieved of the consequences of his or her choice, in this case, losing custody of one's own child. That's only two instances of this fascist son of a bitch. According to People for the American Way, not all of Southwick's record has been provided to the Judiciary Committee, including records from his tenure in Pappy Bush's Department of Justice and more than 2 years' worth of unpublished decisions by the Mississippi Court of Appeals in cases on which he voted, but he didn't write an opinion. Ralph Nees, president for People for the American Way, said, quote, given what we already know about Southwick, it would be irresponsible for senators to proceed with his nomination, end quote. Proceed with his nomination. Well, today, first there was an action to end debate, which means to cut off the filibuster, and the Senate voted to end that debate on Southwick's nomination by a vote of 62-35. 62-35. Think about the vote. That means how many? 13 Democrats voted to confirm this son of a bitch. Okay? Keep that in mind. The nomination moved forward because 12 Democrats and Joe Lieberman decided to vote with the Republicans. After that, later on today, the Senate, over the objections of most Democrats and civil rights groups, confirmed this piece of human waste, Southwick, by a vote of 59 to 38. 59 to 38. Approved Leslie Southwick of Mississippi to the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. So 12 Democrats voted with Republicans to shut off debate. And then 8 of them stayed with the program and voted to confirm this racist, homophobic pig. Democrats. Democrats. And the Republicans had warned the Democrats that if they blocked Southwick by the use of a filibuster, well, that could subject judicial nominees of a future Democratic president to the same treatment. Oh, God, really? The Republicans said, if you don't confirm this racist, homophobic piece of human trash, Democrats, when you start to nominate them, we will filibuster. And immediately the Democrats fell apart. Oh, okay, all right. Don't hit me again. I'm sorry. Don't beat me again. I love you. Don't beat me again. I love you. Last August, Dianne Feinstein joined Republicans on the Judiciary Committee in voting to send Southwick's nomination to the full Senate. All the other Democrats on the panel opposed him. Had it not been for Dianne Feinstein, his nomination would have been killed in committee. Mississippi Republican Trent Lott told a news conference today, choking back tears, that back then Feinstein took a tough stand and she showed a lot of courage. Feinstein said today that fights over judges can hurt both parties and, quote, it's got to end, end quote. What? It's got to end, Senator Feinstein? Therefore, confirm a racist, homophobic son of a bitch who should be shoveling slop on a pig farm, but now is going to sit on the United States Court of Appeals? What happens, Senator Feinstein, when somebody who happens to be gay has a case in front of this bastard, or someone who doesn't like to be called a good old nigger? What happens then, Diane? Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Yes, it's still the Nova M Radio Network. I still am Mike Malloy, and you are still tuned in. Thank you. The Senate vote today on the confirmation of Mississippi racist and homophobe Leslie Southwick to be a U.S. Circuit judge on the Fifth Circuit, which I believe, somebody will correct me on this, I'm sure, but I believe that's in New Orleans. It is one of the most right-wing courts in the country after the one in Virginia. Anyway, Southwick, who by his own record is a homophobe, he takes children away from, in this case, a little girl away from her mother because the mother happened to be in a relationship with another woman. And Southwick claimed that as a result of this woman's sexual orientation, she was a second-class citizen and therefore did not have the same rights, by definition, under the Constitution. Fourth Amendment rights, Fifth Amendment rights, what else? And therefore had no right to raise her own daughter. I hate these bastards with a fury that I can't get into on radio. What bastards, Mike? The Democrats, who confirm a piece of human waste like this to be a judge. This man is 57. Unless his God strikes him dead, rips his heart out and stomps it and tosses his ass into hell, he will probably be on that court for 25 years. Now, the vote was 59 in favor, 38 against, 3 not voting. The 3 not voting were Kennedy, Dodd, and who else? Who else did not vote? I think it was another Democrat, if I'm not mistaken. 59 to confirm him. Oh, but wait a minute, you say. Mike, there's only 51 counting the piglet Joe Lieberman. There's only 51 Democratic senators in the Senate. How could the vote have been 59? Well, the Democrats who voted yes to confirm a racist homophobe, Akaka of Hawaii, Boxer, no, she didn't vote, that was the other one, Bird of West Virginia, all here today to confirm the appointment. What? Of Judge Leslie Southwick. That bird. Conrad of North Dakota. Christopher Dodd of Connecticut. Oh, no, he was not voting. Dorgan of North Dakota. Feinstein of California. Johnson of South Dakota. Lieberman. Lincoln of Arkansas. Nelson of Nebraska, and Pryor of Arkansas. Both of Arkansas's Democratic senators voted to confirm a racist homophobe. It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, these types of appointments could be stopped at any time, but these filthy, filthy Democrats support, suck up to, stroke, cuddle, kiss George W. Bush. Anything you want us to do, Mr. Bush. Don't beat me again. I love you. Please don't beat me again. I love you. Ah, 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 all that hurts. I love you. Jesus, God. So, Judge Leslie Southwick is now a confirmed U.S. Circuit Court judge. And in that capacity, he will decide who is a good old nigger or who doesn't deserve to raise her child because she happens possibly to be gay. Wow. Got an email here from Bob at headonradionetwork.com. Head on radio, as in head on collision. Headonradionetwork.com. Today is their second anniversary of Head on Radio Network. If you haven't gone to headonradionetwork.com, you need to do it. You need to, not during my program, but I mean you need to do it. Bob writes, I've been thinking a lot today about all the people who have helped make it go, and you're a big part of that. In 2 years' time, we've grown from one show for 3 hours a night, Monday through Friday, to as much as 15 hours a day of live liberal conversation. Dog willing. That's right, Bob is dyslexic. Never mind. Dog willing will toddle on to 3 years old. It's a one day at a time kind of thing, and we're all grateful for the kindness you've shown our effort. Bob, well, I didn't, you know. Anyway, headonradionetwork.com. If you haven't been there, go check them out. Headonradionetwork.com. You can hear them on iTunes Radio also at the talk/spoken word, but headonradionetwork.com. Simon in the UK, who we haven't heard from for a while, sent me this. It's from Bob Furtick's blog at Democrats.com. I didn't know this. The Congressional Budget Office just issued a report saying, I knew this part, saying the cost of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan will total $2.4 trillion through the next decade, or nearly $8,000 per man, woman, and child in this country. So when the House Budget Committee held a hearing on this report today, how many Republicans cared enough to show up? Not one. So Simon writes, if they don't care one bit about the biggest military and economic disaster in American history, is there a reason to have any Republicans in Congress? Take the pledge at norepublicans.org. Norepublicans.org. Simon writes, doesn't surprise me in the least that they wouldn't turn up. The number of Republicans either retiring, resigning, or scrambling to stay out of jail is enough to fill two committee rooms. P.S. If anyone was wondering where I'd got to, I finally got some full-time work. Listening tonight as I'm off sick with a virus. Okay. Not a single Republican showed up for the hearing on the House Budget Committee about the war. The Republicans in Congress, ever since this Bush bastard was elected, the Republicans have been nothing. And you know this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Nothing but a rubber stamp. If Bush declared Sundays to be Mondays and Saturdays to be Thursdays, the Republicans would have said, oh, okay, yeah, okay, that sounds good to me. Filthy, filthy pigs. As Simon says, why, Simon says, I like that, why should anyone vote Republican for anything? NoRepublicans.org. That's a new website to me. I'll have to check it out. NoRepublicans.org. Okay, and then one more email here, and then we're going to do Condoleezza Rice here in a minute. Well, no, we're not going to do her. We're going to listen. I've got Condi on my mind. We're going to listen to Too Much Cappuccino Farina, whatever the hell her name is. Can you stretch this a minute? Hi, Mike. The worst part of the Fox Noise scoop about the FBI memo. This is the one that Fox Noise said that Al-Qaeda said the next time there's an attack in the U.S. would be forest fires. So Bridget writes, the worst part of the Fox Noise scoop about the FBI memo is that the memo was 4 years old and was information obtained from a detainee who had undoubtedly been tortured. And he named four states where these fires would occur, none of them California. Mike, this pisses me off so bad I want to throw things. There are 1 million people who have had to flee from their homes and sit in fear that their homes and lives are going up in flames. And this is all happening because there's been no rain. More heat than ever before, dead trees because the bark beetles that are thriving because the winters are no longer cold enough to kill them off, can you say global warming? And wind gusts at 108 miles an hour. And not enough equipment to fight the fires because the National Guard's equipment that would ordinarily be available to fight the fires is in Iraq. And these sons of bitches have to shift the focus from the tragedy and disaster to Al-Qaeda? Mike, I'm so angry my fingers can't even talk coherently. I'm sorry, but these people are such scum. They have no right to breathe the clean, air-conditioned, pristine air in their effing studios. Never mind have a microphone at their disposal. I hate these people. I just hate these people. We've been keeping in touch with friends who were evacuated. A couple of others we know were in the path of one of the fires. We haven't been able to find them. So far, in our circle of friends, no lost houses, just one lemon tree. I hate these people. I just can't stop saying it. I hate these people. Bridget. Yeah, what else, you know, what else can you say? An Al-Qaeda memo that says the next attack on the U.S. will be forest fires. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Yeah.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run.
22 past the hour. All right, here's the setup. The scandal du jour from these filthy Republicans. Of course, it's not du jour. It's been going on forever. The skewing of reports that might offend or upset corporate America. The skewing of these reports, the changing of these reports, no matter what it's about. Weather, growing corn, step on a crack, break your mother's back. Doesn't make any difference what the report is. If there is some corporate vampire operating out of Cheney's office and they are legion, and they see the report, because the reports now, as it was as they were in the old Soviet Union, all reports have to be submitted to the Politburo for clearance before it goes out to the proles. If the corporate thugs in Cheney's office or in any of these offices now, this honeycomb of rat swarms in the White House and the old executive office building, anything that offends the corporations is immediately redacted, deleted, changed, dropped, and the person about to give the testimony or who wrote the report is severely penalized, fired, beaten, sent to Guantanamo, or forced to listen to Condoleezza Rice give testimony at some congressional hearing. That is extreme torture. It was Julie Gerberding. Don't send me a pronouncer. Gerberding. It was Dr. Julie Gerberding, the director of the CDC, based here in Atlanta, who was on the hot seat. I keep thinking about Christy Whitman and just on and on and on and on. People who, even though they might have been Republicans or Republican appointees, made at least a cosmetic effort to get the truth out and wound up either resigning, being fired, or, as I said, waterboarded at Guantanamo. According to the Associated Press, the White House severely edited congressional testimony given yesterday by the director of the CDC on the impact of climate change on health by removing specific scientific references to potential health risks. That's according to two sources familiar with the documents. And there were many sources who saw these documents. Dr. Gerberding released them to various public health groups that represented states and counties and city health agencies before, or at the same time, she sent it on to the political officer in the White House. So the report in its unedited, unredacted version was out there. The AP goes on to say, Dr. Julie Gerberding, director of CDC, told a Senate hearing that climate change, quote, is anticipated to have a broad range of impacts on the health of Americans, end quote. But her prepared testimony, that which she was forced to give before the Senate committee, was devoted entirely to the CDC's preparation, with very few details of what effects climate change could have on the spread of disease. Only during questioning by some of the senators did she describe some specific diseases that likely would be affected. She did it without elaboration, but her testimony before the Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee had much less information on health risks than a much longer draft version that she submitted to the White House Office of Management and Budget for review in advance of her appearance. A CDC official familiar with both versions, who spoke on condition of anonymity because of the sensitive nature of the review process, said, quote, the report was eviscerated. The document was cut from its original 14 pages to 4. I believe she had 6 when she went before the committee. Gerberding could not be reached for a comment, but she was said to have been surprised by the extensive changes. The deletions directed by the White House included details of how many people might be adversely affected because of increased warming and the scientific basis for some of the CDC's analysis on what kinds of diseases might be spread in a warmer climate and rising sea levels. Diseases that will affect everybody, including and most severely including this country's children. More in a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
We gotta live on.
If there's not arsenic in the water, I'd be worried about it.
Twenty-six before the hour. So let me give it to you again very briefly. Dr. Julie Gerberding, the director of the CDC based here in Atlanta, which is the government's numero uno premier disease monitoring agency. It's involved in pure science, hard science. Was ready to testify, Dr. Julie was, in front of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee to let the good senators know what we are facing in this country as a result of global heating and climate change. She submitted to the Office of Management and Budget, which is the standard procedure, the White House Office of Management and Budget. That's like the old Soviet Union when they had to submit the reports to the local Politburo member. And the report was eviscerated. It was cut from its original 14 pages to 4. And Dr. Julie was forbidden from discussing certain aspects of it. Senator Barbara Boxer, the committee's chairman, produced a CDC chart listing a broad range of health problems that could emerge from a significant temperature increase and sea level rise. They include fatalities from heat stress and heart failure, increased injuries and deaths from severe weather such as hurricanes, more respiratory problems from drought-driven air pollution, an increase in waterborne diseases including cholera, and increases in vector-borne diseases including malaria and the hantavirus, mental health problems such as depression and post-traumatic stress syndrome, on and on and on. When she was asked about the items listed, Dr. Julie said, "These are the potential things you can expect. In some of these areas, it's not a question of if, it's a question of who, what, why, how, and when." Thank you. It was pathetic. Now, you have to wonder, as Andre did, Andre sent me an email here, "Mike, why didn't Dr. Julie say before the committee, the president and vice president are asking me to censure my findings before the American people, and then resign?" She could have, but she didn't. Well, yeah, that's true. Why didn't Christy Whitman resign when she was forced to say that the air in the around Wall Street, around South Manhattan, after the collapse of the trade towers, she was forced to say that everything was okay, go back to work, when it wasn't? I don't know. I don't know why Republicans or political appointees from this monstrous little bastard in the White House, why They don't just walk out. Just walk out and say, "This is insane. I'm not going to participate in this anymore." I don't know. I don't know why that. I don't know why Democrats don't do that. So anyway, according to two sources, the Bush crime family severely edited, actually eviscerated, congressional testimony that was to go before the Senate. And the crack White House press corps today wanted to know about that. So Spinderella, Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino, the latest... I don't want to call her a whore for the Bush crime family, because then I get into gender-specific slurs. So I don't know what to call her. I'll just call her Spinderella. Spinderella denied that the Bushies had censored the congressional testimony. She denied it. It's amazing. There are copies out pre-censor, post-censor. There are copies all over the goddamn country. And Spinderella denies that it happens. I told you this would be about Newspeak. This would be about Orwellian crap. This has not happened. The events of today did not happen. The sun did not rise. The moon did not set. None of it occurred. It did not. Spinderella denied any censorship. But a draft of the testimony submitted for White House review shows that 6-8 pages of details about specific disease and other health problems that will flourish, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, if this planet continues to warm, were not delivered at the hearing. So, we report, you decide. Hey, I like that. Reporters today pushed the neutron blonde on this issue, asking, first one says, Dana, on the CDC testimony, you said this morning that Dr. Gerberding's testimony was not watered down. Can you tell us why it was altered to leave out any discussion of serious health effects relating to global warming? And to leave out her original comment that, quote, CDC considers climate change a serious public health concern?
This administration's policy on climate change is an open book. There is robust information about where we stand on policy, on the science, on the initiatives, and on the international cooperation that we have initiated under this president. One of the things that happens under our administration and previous administrations is that testimony comes to a process where everyone gets a chance to have a look at it. In this case, the testimony, I believe, came a little bit less than 24 hours before it was going to be given. The CDC, they are the experts when it comes to disease vectors. There are experts that deal specifically with climate science. And we have experts and scientists across this administration that can take a look at that testimony and say, this is an error, or this doesn't make sense. And so the decision on behalf of CDC was to focus that testimony on public health benefits. There are public health benefits to climate change as well, but both benefits and concerns.
There are public health benefits to climate change. Yeah, there are public health benefits to terminal cancer, too. You know what they are? When you sit in the chemotherapy room with other people who are terminal getting current chemotherapy, you can make new friendships. These people are sick. Sorry, sons of bitches. This administration's policy on climate change is an open book? The CDC, they are the experts when it comes to disease vectors. That's what she said. So what Speedy Perino is saying is that they restricted Dr. Julie's testimony because they didn't consider her suitably informed on the impact of global warming on public health. And she says there are public health benefits to climate change. Benefits like, oh, let me see, it's nice to feel warm and cozy in Minnesota in the middle of January, or if you live in Georgia. You've had enough to drink, right? Time for a drought? Or polar bears have lived long enough. Screw them. They're big, white, lumbering bastards anyway. Or the wildflowers growing in Antarctica sure are pretty. Benefits like that. You know, I think I hate her to a depth that goes way beyond the last three White House spokesgeeks. Next reporter followed up on this latest scandal, asking Lava Lips, can you describe what the problem was with Dr. Gerberding's intended testimony? Would it have been outside her purview to say that the CDC considers climate change a serious public health concern? I mean, was that going too far?
I think what it is when you take when you try to summarize what is a very complicated issue, and you have many different experts who have a lot of opinions, and you get a testimony less than 24 hours before it's going to be given. Scientists across the administration were taking a look at it, and there was a decision that she would focus where she is an expert, which is on CDC.
In other words, what? The CDC is charged with public health. Dr. Gerberding is in charge of CDC. And she had a report to give. And Dana Perino says there was a decision that she would focus where she's an expert, which is on the CDC. But you altered her testimony. you eliminated everything that would be counter to what the oil industry wants, counter to what the coal industry wants, counter to what the pharmaceutical industry wants. In other words, Dr. Gerberding was told to keep her mouth shut. And what is this? The second time she mentioned, when you try to summarize what is a very complicated issue and you have many different experts who have a lot of opinions and you get testimony less than 24 hours before it's going to be given, what does that mean? Does that mean it was not enough time for you pig bastards to rewrite it entirely? Is that what that means, Dana? Still another reporter now tries to get a straight answer from Legally Bland on the CDC scandal. He did manage to get the Valley Girl, to admit that the Bush crime family did indeed suggest, she edited her testimony, to align with their own, quote, scientific findings. Reporter says, you said many experts have a lot of opinions, Dana, so why wasn't the Senate committee able to hear Dr. Gerberding's full opinion? Why were 10 pages of 14 taken out?
I disagree, Peter. I think that she was able to give her full opinion. We know that the Earth is warming. We believe that humans are largely responsible. And the President has initiated a process so that we can get to a framework to have discussions about how to end global warming after 2012. I shouldn't say end global warming. We know it's going to happen. How we can help curtail it.
Is it typical for the White House to cut that much of an administration official?
You know, I don't look at testimony. What I can tell you, it is typical for us to review testimony that comes across. And I think that when you have an issue as large as climate change and as complicated, and the White House reaches out to all sorts of scientists across the administration when it comes to climate change, if they have concerns that the IPCC document, of which we agreed to its inclusions on, does not align with the testimony, that the prudent thing to do was to move forward to have her testimony. And remember, we only suggest the edits.
we only suggest the edits. We only suggest. Oh, my God. Winston, look at me. How many fingers am I holding up? Four. Winston, how many fingers? Four. Winston, how many fingers? You might see five. Five! Five! I see five! We only suggest the edits, Lava Lips says. Oh my God.
Any collective approach is one based upon sound science, and not based upon science.
Nine before the hour. Sorry about that distortion. We had a little bit too much volume on that. Still another report. We're still talking with Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino about the forcing of Dr. Julie Gerberding to alter, destroy, hide, change her testimony about the effects of global climate change, brought to you by your less-than-friendly petroleum industry, coal industry, pharmaceutical industry, all the industries that now run this country. Another reporter now tries to get a straight answer from, we just did that one. All right, one more on this. Listen as Deep Dana Thrombosis admits that Dr. Gerberding's testimony was edited by the Bush crime family. The reporter says, Dana, another CDC official was saying that her testimony was eviscerated by this White House. One of the issues that was edited was the human factor in global climate change. As I'm sure you're aware, there have been a lot of scientists that have gone before Congress and have said that their testimony has been edited and that it has been basically, I wouldn't say eviscerated, but with certain things not included in the testimony.
I will tell you that, once again, it was edits to make sure that it comported and aligned with the science that, that was provided by our own National Academy of Sciences.
Oh, Jesus.
And there are experts in this area that can look at it and know exactly what they would say and to make sure that it's in line with the science. If you're not an expert on the science, to me it makes sense to ask an expert on the science if what you're saying is accurate. And if we are guided by the IPCC document and our own National Academy of Sciences, I think that's pretty good company.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's that bad, Truth Seeker. It's way beyond that. This Dana Perino is really something, isn't she? Huh? I think back to Ari Fleischer and Scotty McClellan and Tony Snow and just what really Soviet-style liars they were. And then we have Dana Perino. She's like a magpie. I've never run across a human being like this. The patronizing, condescending attitude. Of course, the crack White House press corps deserves any crap that is tossed on them because of their 7 years of utter, absolute subservience to this filthy Nazi Soviet administration. But still, there is left within me the dregs of a writer that I used to be, journalist, before I got into talk radio, that just screams my guts out when I think how easily the White House press corps gives these people, especially now Dana Perino, a pass. This was posted at Daily Coast today. It's from our local paper here in Atlanta, the Journal Constitution. It's from April 26, 2007. Facing a tangled bureaucracy and a lack of qualified staff, nearly half the overseas jobs at the Centers for Disease Control are vacant, despite an urgent need to guard against foreign health threats. Many of the jobs will remain unfilled for another year, according to an internal CDC memo obtained by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Dr. Stephen Blunt, director of the CDC's Coordinating Office for Global Health, wrote in an April 13th memo to CDC Director Julie Gerberding, quote, "This is a critical time for global health. The potential of an influenza pandemic, the current HIV/AIDS pandemic, and the threat of a bioterrorist attack from abroad fuels the urgency to make overseas assignments in a timely manner," end quote, he wrote. Only 166 of the CDC's 304 overseas positions in 53 countries are filled, according to the memo. At least 85 positions likely will remain unfilled until 2008. Among the causes cited by Dr. Blunt, delays at a federal human resource center in Atlanta, and an additional bureaucratic layer that requires CDC foreign postings be approved by a senior political appointees office in Washington. Do you hear that last part? In order to be posted overseas to monitor health threats to the United States, the appointee has to be approved by a senior political appointee. Not medical, not scientific, but another one of these filthy goddamn Bush appointees. Another example of the Sovietization of the Bush crime of the United States by the Bush crime family. An appointment of a doctor to monitor overseas health threats to the United States has to be approved by a Bush political appointee. Political.
Are you going to say anything about the petroleum industry, even by reference? Are you going to say anything about the pharmaceutical industry, or the insurance industry, or the coal industry? Huh? You are? Well, are you a born-again Christian? You're not. Get out of here before I send you to Guantanamo.
We'll be right back.
All right, your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. As promised, let's do some phone calls here. Stephanie is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Is that right, Stephanie? 94.1 the mic?
Yes, it is. And, Mike, we are so glad to have you back on and have you back on in real time. Me too. Oh, God. It's like, yeehaw! I was just the first night when you were on in real time. I just, my husband and I were just, just dancing around the room. And I got to tell you, I wake up screaming sometimes, and I end my day screaming, but I also, you make me laugh, and you make my husband laugh.
Well, that's good.
Love you.
That's good.
By the way, who does that version of Bird on a Wire? I really like that.
That's Jennifer Warnes.
Okay.
She has a CD that came out, oh my God, probably 12 years ago, called Famous Blue Raincoat, and it's all Leonard Cohen music. And she does, on some songs, she does a better job than Leonard Cohen. It's called
man.
Famous Blue Raincoat. Get it?
I will. I was going, I know that voice, and Jennifer Warnes.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm calling to talk about Too Much Cappuccino Farino. And,
yeah.
You know, I have the same reaction as you. I mean, each one of those people that Bush has had for a press secretary has had their own type of real irritating behavior. I mean, Scott was just snotty and dumb, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
Tony was a little slicker. I didn't listen as much when Ari Fleischer was the press secretary.
The only thing missing to me on Ari Fleischer was his SS uniform.
Exactly.
I mean, he just looked like a Nazi secret you know, the SS, the stormtrooper.
Yep.
He really
yep.
did. And I say that knowing full well he's Jewish. No offense to his Jewishness, but he looked like a Nazi to me.
Sometimes so. People look like what they are.
That's
you know,
right.
I don't watch television. So I have not seen Dana Perino. Everybody says she's like real little and attractive, but just listening to her, you know, what is so maddening about her, aside from the fact that she is patronizing, is that she thinks she's just, you know, she just jabbers on, thinks she's sounding intelligent, and she just talks a whole lot of nothing.
She is the most perfect of all the Bush press secretaries in regurgitating the company line for that particular day. Scott McClellan used to repeat himself. Tony Snow never did. Tony Snow was a lot slicker because he came out of Fox Noise, and he's an expert at lying. But Dana Perino is, as far as I'm concerned, she's the best at having her pumpkin head filled with what she is supposed to say early in the morning, and she retains it when she goes out there during the press briefing, and would just stand there and repeat it over and over and over and over again.
And in such a way that, I mean, she's just somebody you just want to, like, figuratively speaking, slap her, you know? I mean,
I know what you mean, yeah.
Oh, it's just because it's like you can't really get at it. She'll just keep talking to, you know, just all this nothing, you know, just a lot of words that are supposed to sound intelligent and articulate. And, you know, she sounds like she's on speed, honest to God. She really does.
Well, that's why the person who named her when we ran that contest, Too Much Cappuccino Perino, won, because she does. She just, Sounds like somebody who must have a spigot from Starbucks that just runs, you know, under her underwear and into a vein, and they just keep filling her up. Yes, Kathy?
Well, I prefer to think of it more of as a meth lab, like a portable meth lab that she carries around in a little backpack, kind of like a little cooler, like, you know, maybe she makes it over the Starbucks, you know, because you can go get those cold tabs and you can cook them down, in the, you know, if you have a little Bunsen burner that you can keep under your desk.
God.
And you know what? She'd sound a lot more intelligent if she didn't end every sentence on an upswing like that, because she just sounds like a belly girl when she talks like that. My administration's policy on climate change is an open book.
You remind me. I mean, I knew speed freaks, and that's exactly what they talk. You know, they just talk. That words will just come out, and they think they're just, you know, just being so slick and so articulate. They just it's all air. You know, what did she come out of? What was her background? How did she get into that job?
I'm not sure. I know she worked in. I think she comes from. I think she was a Karl Rove hire. I know her family is deeply involved with Bush, but I think she was, I think Karl Rove hired her. I'm not sure. I could probably Google it. So could you.
I don't have a computer yet. I'm
oh, you don't?
On
okay.
No.
Well, somebody will Google it probably before this phone call is over and send me a link. And as soon as I get it, I will share it with you.
You guys are awesome. I love you both. And it's just, I'm so glad you're on the radio. I mean, I'm really, you guys, you know, I'll be feeling outrage, but then you make me laugh, you know, or somebody will call up and make me laugh. So
that's well, <I'm, laughs>
anyway.
I'm glad. Thanks, Stephanie. Thanks for checking in. All right.
You betcha. Okay.
Right. Take care. Take care. And we are glad to be back on the mic in Madison, 94.1. Let me see. Who's next? Moses is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Moses. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I've been on your program before, and I thank you so much for everything that you've done in expressing your anger, especially now where you should express your anger at the Democrats more than any other people. I mean, forget about these low-life Republicans. I mean, these Democrats are what's really infuriating me right now. And, you know, the fact that a lot of us are buying into this media of Hillary Clinton and everything. I mean, to be honest with you, I think Hillary Clinton will be as effective as Nancy Pelosi right now, to be honest, if she became president. My top four choices would probably be Obama, Kucinich, Gore, and Edwards is my number one. But after Edwards would be Kucinich, Gore, and Obama. But what I really came to talk to you about is my frustration because Pete Stark, Congressman Pete Stark, has apologized today for what he said. And not only did he apologize to the Republicans, but he apologized to the president, in which he was right. Had pleasure off the death of the kids, of the people who are my age. I'm 23, and you know these are my brothers and sisters who are fighting in Iraq. And this president has made jokes numerous times about the war, and he's made jokes numerous times about finding weapons of mass destruction. He's taken pleasure off this war and the death of many people. P-Star called it as it is, and today he had the nerve. I mean, he just apologized and caved in to these Republican.
Actually, Moses, I hate to tell you this, but it was yesterday, and you must have missed the program last night because we talked about it in great detail last night. It was yesterday afternoon or yesterday morning, Moses, that he made the apology, and it's a shame. I agree with you. It was just awful to see that happen. Thanks, Moses. Take care, pal. We'll talk again. Phil is calling from San Diego. Phil, welcome to the program. Listening on KLSD. Hey, Phil. All right, let's put Phil on hold, and we'll try to get back to Phil in a second here. Ryan is calling from Sydney, Montana, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I'm all for global warming. It was 69 degrees in eastern Montana today, and it was wonderful.
You're confusing global warming with a weather report.
No, it was 16. It broke the record. It was hotter today than it's been in 50 years.
Right. So what does that mean?
So it means that we're doing what we should do on this earth.
What do you mean?
I don't, I, I just think that this whole global warming, the meteorologists and scientists and all these people, they can't even predict the weather for 2 days. Do you think they have an idea what's going to happen 100 years from now? And how?
Ryan, try real hard to hear what I'm saying. Global warming is not about weather reports. You're confusing weather reports with scientific information based on, among other things, ice cores that are several hundred thousand years old, showing amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere when the Earth was heating the last time. You're confusing a weather report with global climate change. Now, if you want to hold on, I'll come back and try again with you after this break.
Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk, and you talk that talk.
We want to work cooperatively with these countries in their efforts to reduce greenhouse emissions.
Out off of my feet. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
21 past the hour. Ryan has called in from Sydney, Montana, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. All right, Ryan, where were we?
We were talking about how nice it is that the Earth is warming up.
Why do you think it's nice?
I don't think it's a bad thing for the Earth to warm up a little bit. It's what, a 1 degree in over 100 years?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know what the change is.
Well, the polar ice caps, the polar ice cap is disappearing. Species are starting to be eliminated. We become more susceptible to diseases as what used to be subtropical becomes common weather. All sorts of diseases, viruses, bugs, and germs flourish when things get warm. That's why the tropics are so full of disease. That and the fact that nobody cares because the tropics are full of brown people and they really don't count. But,
do you think we were better off 100 years ago, back when before we had cars?
I'm sorry?
Do you think we were better off as a society 100 years ago before we burned COT, or before we burn fossil fuels? Do you think we are better off as a society 100, 200 years ago?
Gosh, that's a tough question.
Because I don't think so. I think that we live probably twice as long as we did back then. I think we have so much more options available to us. It's better for us as a society to have gasoline in our cars and a nice warm house to go to. I think that there's some side effects to it. I don't think polluting is good, but I don't think that we should completely ruin our way of life right now just because we think that in 100 years, another degree is going to be added to the temperature of the Earth.
Well, that's not what responsible science is predicting. They're not saying in another 100 years, another degree. What they're saying is by mid-21st century, you sound relatively young, you're probably not 30, by the time you are 50, if the science is correct, and there's no reason to assume it's not correct, you'll be dead.
The same that we believed in the 70s that we were going into an ice age. What's the difference now?
There was no belief that we were going into an ice age. What was said was that global climate change was starting to take effect. And 40 years ago, almost 40 years ago in the 70s, the science was still being discussed. Now, it's just like at one time, believe it or not, Ryan, at one time, they used to think that people who had epilepsy were possessed by demons. And the best scientific minds of the time, such as they were, said, well, yeah, all you have to do is cast out the demons. So back in the 70s in this country, yes, there was discussion about the possibility of global cooling, another ice age. What the scientists didn't understand back then, because nobody was taking a look at it, was how serious it was going the other direction. And now all the proof that anyone with a rational mind could want is right there for people to look at.
Well, I understand the Earth's warming, but you think that in 30 years that we're all going to be extinct, then what is the chance of us turning around this major catastrophe?
I don't think we're all going to be extinct. I think there are circumstances heading our way that are going to make it very difficult to survive. Wait a second, let me finish. 30 years from now, there's no question I will be dead. But 30 years from now, Ryan, you will still be alive. So whatever suffering, and it will be monumental, that occurs to people, will occur to my children, my grandchildren, and you. So I think maybe what you ought to do, rather than say it's not happening, take a look at the possibility, if that's the word you want to use. Other people use the word probability or certainty. Take a look at the possibility of what global warming could do, and then relate it to your own life. Trust me, it's more than having mid-60s in October in Montana. Just trust me on that, and then do your own research. Can you do that? Do you know how to do research?
I know how to do some research.
Okay, well, what you need to do, and I really mean this, very, very sincerely, Ryan, you need to do some research. What I hear coming from you is right-wing gibberish, and you sound like a decent young man who might still be salvageable. I may be wrong. You may have heard enough Sean Hannity and enough Rush Limbaugh and enough non-science and enough religious nonsense to turn your brain into absolute sloshing gray liquid. But I'm willing to gamble that that's not the case. So do some research, Ryan, independent research. Go to the websites that you don't agree with and see what they have to say. That would be the scientific websites, and check it out. And when you finally do actual research and come to some actual conclusions, not about it's 67 degrees in Montana today, but I mean actual research, and you come to some conclusions, which you will, then call me back and say to me the following: Mike, I have something to talk with you about. Take care, Ryan.
We live in a global world, and that creates uncertainty in some. I understand that.
I was born like this. I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice. And 27 angels from the great beyond, they tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song.
Don't you just want to go smoke cigarettes and drink beer and listen to Leonard Cohen in some little bar in Montreal? Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? I guess Brian don't live in, he's not a farmer. But I tell you, Atlanta's going to face a big problem by 90 days, aren't they?
We're in deep doo-doo here because of the water shortage. We had some rain today, which means nothing.
Unless there's a miracle, buddy, people are going to be standing in line for fresh water. There's going to be nothing done by this government. You know, and the average American doesn't realize this. This is one of the reasons you're going to have to pay taxes, huge amounts of taxes, because we've passed the tipping point as far as climate change goes. And instead of buying your iPods and your iPhones and playing video games, you better start thinking about maybe having a water system in this country that's can have reservoirs that pipe water around the country where it's needed. A couple of days ago, New Orleans was flooded with 10 inches of water. Mm-hmm. Be nice to have that in a reservoir and be able to pipe into Georgia, you know. But nobody's looking at it that way.
Yeah, that takes too much planning. And besides, the developers and the builders would probably find that offensive. And the petroleum industry would hate it. And pharmaceutical companies wouldn't like it. And on and on.
Let me make a quick point about the fires, too.
Sure.
They knew this was coming for months. Why wasn't there all these big aircraft, tanker aircraft, parked on the runways, loaded with fire retardant? Or maybe when the winds picked up, some planes put in the air to be ready to dump retardant wherever it started.
They're in Iraq.
I mean, in California.
Yeah.
You know, you could certainly jump on the fire immediately wherever it started. But they're playing games. That's all they're doing. They're letting it happen.
I hear you, Joe. Thanks,
take
Phil.
Care, brother.
All right, I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, here in Atlanta, the Army Corps of Engineers has told us that we have a good 8 months' supply of water. The Republican governor, Sonny Perdue, who couldn't find his ass with both hands, insists we have 80 days of water. Sonny has responded to the crisis by filing a lawsuit against the Army Corps of Engineers, who persist in releasing 1.5 billion gallons of water out of the main reservoir for Atlanta, Lake Lanier, every couple of days in order to fulfill federal requirements regarding not just endangered species, but also a nuclear power plant that is downstream on the Chattahoochee River, which flows out of the North Georgia Mountains and flows from Atlanta all the way down to Apalachicola Bay in the panhandle of Florida. The governor of Alabama has threatened to file a lawsuit against the state of Georgia. Sonny Perdue, the governor of Georgia, has filed a lawsuit or is on the verge of filing a lawsuit against the Army Corps of Engineers. And it goes on and on and on. And as I mentioned earlier this week, or maybe last week, not a single politician in Georgia, Republican or Democrat, the power structure now in Georgia is total Republican, but not a single Republican member of the leadership in this state has suggested the most obvious: declare a moratorium on all building. I heard a statistic today. I don't know how this applies in other metro areas, but in this metropolitan area, 52% of the water use goes to homes and office buildings. It's used in a consumptive way at homes and office buildings. Which, very simply, there are many things to apply. Low-flow commodes in everybody's house, for one thing. Water conservation where it concerns, stop paving over. I think here in Georgia, it's 25 acres, or here in Atlanta, it's 25 acres a day are turned into concrete, paved over. The land is ripped up, which means groundwater can't be absorbed. I mean, there's 100 different things that could be done to conserve water. But what they've ordered here in North Georgia, not South Georgia, but in North Georgia, is restrictions on, there's a total outdoor watering ban. Ooh, that'll help. It's just insane. This area is not designed in a... hydrologic way, I guess that's a word, the study of groundwater and water flows in rivers and lakes. North Georgia, Atlanta sits in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, and this area is not geographically designed to sustain a metropolitan population of approaching 6 million, which is what we have in Atlanta. In the time I've been in this area, I have watched it go from under 1 million to 6 million. I could go on and on, and I'm sure you could too. The Southwest, our listeners in the desert Southwest, whether you're in Arizona or New Mexico or Nevada or Arizona, you all are facing catastrophe also. The Imperial Valley in California, catastrophe. It's astonishing what is going on, But I can get a phone call from a young man in Montana who says everything is cool. Well, no, he doesn't. He says everything is warm, which is great. Loves it. But here in Georgia, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea. I know that it could have been handled in a more intelligent way if 30 years ago, when people in Metro Atlanta were warning the Atlanta Regional Commission, we've got to do something. We've got to do something about mass transit. We've got to do something about this unending building here in Atlanta. We've got to do something about a lack of water. Atlanta has one of the most underserved water supply systems of any metro area of its size in the country. But you know what? Governor Sonny Perdue, our Republican governor, our Republican speaker of the Georgia House, our Republican Senate leader, all our Republicans, not one of these brain-dead sons of bitches have come out and said, okay, folks, the building, the development is stopping today. I heard on the local weather tonight that the only thing that will turn this drought around here in North Georgia is to have a couple years of wet weather. Not rain every day, obviously not, but wet seasons. Georgia is entering its driest 2 months. October, November, and December are usually the driest months here, at a time when the two lakes, the two huge reservoir lakes, man-made lakes that provide water for Atlanta, are at historic lows. It's just astonishing. So I sit here and I just think to myself, son of a bitch, I probably should be out and back in the woods drilling a well, but I don't. I just sit here like a typical American and think, I hope this gets solved. Wow. But anyway, to Bob in Miami, yeah, we're in, or was it Joe? We're in a very bad situation here in Metro Atlanta. Extremely bad situation. But frankly, it's only bad because we're used to so much waste, not just in Atlanta, not just in Georgia, but all over the country. This is what we do. We call it, we're consumers. No, we're not. We're wasters. I think about the amount of energy that it takes to run Atlanta for one day would run an entire country on some third world so-called continent for a year. We just waste it. So that's where we are. I hate to see this destruction out west. I hated to see the destruction in New Orleans, in the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And I hate to contemplate what's in store for the North Georgia Mountains. We have as much of this whole situation is caused by a drought, a two-year-long drought. The forests, and we have a lot of them. You fly into Atlanta, you'll see what I mean. As much cutting that has gone on here, and Atlanta is still a city and a forest, and the North Georgia Mountains, the forestry up there, it's very thick and it's very dry. And there are no water supplies to handle major fires. If they break out in North Georgia the way they did in South Georgia earlier this year, the contour of the state is entirely different. The shape of the state in the South is very flat. It's not the Piedmont like where we live. It's very flat. And even with flat terrain and the absence of powerful winds like the Santa Anas out in Southern California or the kinds of powerful winds that can develop in the North Georgia Mountains, it was months to put out those fires in South Georgia. If such a thing occurs in North Georgia, it's time to bring the curtain down. I'm sorry. I just went on and on, didn't I? Stay with us. One more segment left. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
they hid and thought about leaving town. I could have died if I wanted to, slipped over the edge and drowned. But oh no, baby, I won't give up that easy, no. Too many tire tracks in the sands of time. Too many love affairs that stop on a dime.
10 before the hour. We never did get around to tonight to Rudy Giuliani's Catholic priest that's working for him. The priest has been accused of sexually molesting three students specifically, many more alleged. He was told by the church to stop performing his priestly duties. He is Monsignor Alan Placa, or Placa. He officiated at the second wedding Giuliani's second wedding to Donna Hanover. He works for Giuliani Partners in New York. And there is outrage building in some of his accusers and victims groups, which have begun to protest at Giuliani campaign events. Maybe we can get to it tomorrow. It's so typical. I'll tell you something. I've got some stuff here on Giuliani I wanted to get to tonight. We'll get to it tomorrow. But if you don't like the Bush crime family, you got to believe me, the Giuliani crime family will make you pine for the days of George W. Bush. If by some hideous cosmic joke, Giuliani and his cadre of PNAC advisors somehow manages to steal the presidency. I don't know if you believe in prayer or if you're an atheist or whatever, but if you are a praying person, you may want to begin now that Giuliani does not get the Republican nomination or and or the presidency. Oh my God, this guy is an absolute Nazi. Bush is a clown. Giuliani is a Nazi. N-A-Z-I. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, and Catherine Bay for the production of this program tonight. Greg is calling from Hood River, Oregon, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Greg.
Yeah.
Welcome to the program, Greg.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Mike.
Sure.
I was going to shed a little light on the recycling of the depleted uranium.
Uh-huh.
I've been involved in this field for a long time, and I was also at a Sierra Club meeting back in the mid-90s when Bush and Quayle were in office.
Yes.
And there was a lady waving her general accounting office report around that said Quayle was the head of this committee on American competitiveness, I believe the name of it was.
Yes.
And as his function there, he punched the loophole in RCRA that allowed them to recycle hazardous materials and ban pesticides into the inert ingredients portions of pesticides that were used. And they're using that also for the depleted uranium now. So nope. DDT, chlordane, all those we thought were gone, they started showing up fresh all over the country. So this is a long history going on. I've been screaming about this for years, been writing letters.
Mm-hmm. So Dan Quayle lives.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's a long history going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to read, there's a new book out called Dirt.
Dirt?
There's that. Yeah. And I forget the author. I just finished reading it. But in there, in the back of it, it talks about what happened in a farming community in eastern Washington where they were recycling heavy metal-loaded hazardous waste into fertilizer there. Poisoned the farmers, poisoned the vegetables. Did a real good job.
Oh, my God. You know, unrestrained, unregulated, unbridled capitalism is the most serious threat to human life, animal life, and plant life ever developed in the mind of a demon living in the very bowels or anus of hell.
Yep.
And we have it Starting with they tried to get it with Nixon, but there was still enough reputable ethical Democrats to stop it. We got it with Reagan. It's been flourishing under Pappy Bush, Bill Clinton, and now George Herbert or George W. Bush. Altogether, these five presidents or four presidents have done more to utterly and absolutely destroy any chance that the human species has of surviving all this than a cabal of aliens that came here to end human life. I mean, it's incredible what is going on. And this is stuff, it is so common, it's so common that you and I can understand it. I don't know, maybe you're a scientist. I'm not. I'm a radio talk show host, and I get what is going on. I understand that predatory capitalism is going to murder me and my children and my grandchildren. It's going to kill us all. And I want to take up weaponry and try to defend my family, myself, my integrity against this onslaught. But you know what? I wouldn't know where to point the gun.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I really don't. I don't
Clinton
know
Gore were in office, I emailed them begging them to remove depleted uranium from our weaponry.
I know. Before we go, Phil, very quickly, because I've got 10 seconds, what's going on in San Diego regarding the fires?
Hey, Mike?
Yes.
I'll make it quick. In earlier when you were speaking about the...
Wait, who have I got now?
Well, this is Phil from San Diego, California.
Who was I talking? Oh, I was talking to somebody else. I'm sorry.
No,
my bad. I got confused. What's going on in San Diego?
Well, the Fuller Brush Man's going to be here tomorrow, so...
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Everything will be okay. Phil, I got to leave it there. I'm sorry. I just feel like I just ended my program tonight. Like bumbling around in a schizophrenic phase. We'll talk again, Phil. And to the caller I had on right before that, I'm sorry, I don't know what the hell I did. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. Somebody, please. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.